You're listening to a sermon from Heights Church, located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. For more information on our church, please visit heightschurchmn.org.
We're talking about Advent, and so I wanted to focus in on the Gospel of Luke and Luke's story today. That is the where we read from this morning, Mary's song, and walk through the story just a little bit, and just as a reminder to us of the season that we're in, and as we prepare our hearts for Christmas. And one of the things that in this particular season for us, transitioning, we've got the small space here, we're getting ready to do some remodeling over there, still waiting on permits, and pray the Lord will help us on that, you know, but we're always waiting. But as we're in that season, one of the things that we haven't been able to do as much here has been focusing in on Advent like we have been. You know, usually we get to do the candles and things like that. We just haven't had that opportunity. And so I wanted to focus in just as a reminder of Advent today, take a break a little bit from our multiply texts and focus in on just the preparation. Advent, again, just has that meaning of coming, and it's a time where we remember first the coming of the Lord, and then preparing our hearts for the second coming of the Lord, and it's also for the church a calendar event. And again, we don't pay too much attention to this, and I don't think we pay enough attention to it. We get these seasons where we have these breaks, and for the church, it really is a new year. And it starts generally that first Sunday after Thanksgiving to lead up to the four Sundays. So the Sunday before Christmas is that last Sunday of Advent. And we need that reminder, I think, for seasons like this, so that we remember we're not on the world's clock, and we're not on our culture's compass. And we need that reminder that the kingdom of God does operate differently. And seasons like Advent and Lent are gifts to us. And so like Lent, Advent should be a season of preparation. Because we are reminded of Israel looking forward to the coming of Messiah. And then we want to prepare ourselves and have that sense of longing for Christ to come again. So it's this time where we really want to spend, and we've had Advent readings, and on Sundays we focused in on some of the Advent scriptures. But if as we walk through it, it's an opportunity that we prepare ourselves, that we really think about what was Israel going through, and then in so many ways, I find that as I reread these texts, that there are so many things that are parallels for where we are in our day. And just that anticipation that we need, that and that longing that we need for Christ to come again, that we long for his second coming and we want to be ready. One of those things that we have done in the past is to have the candles, you know, one for each week. And the first Sunday is typically the candle of hope that reminds us that God keeps his promises. He promised a Savior and sent one. He promised to come again, and he will. Then there's the candle of preparation on the second week, reminding us to be prepared to receive the Lord, that our hearts need to be ready. And then there's the third week in the candle of joy, and the candle remembers the multitude of angels that joyfully pronounce the birth of Christ. And then this particular Sunday, candle of love, that represents the love of God. And it was out of his incredible love that God sent his only son, Jesus. And then typically in the middle would be the white candle, the Christ candle, that in most churches would, in tradition, would be lit on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day in worship. And so there is that time of preparation. And so maybe you haven't really thought too much about it in, you know, leading up to this week, but maybe from today through to Christmas Eve and Christmas morning, just to have a sense of preparing for what the Lord wants to do in our lives and through us. And so we come to the text today in Luke chapter 1, And it's that final, that we have the final Sunday before Christmas here. And then we will have our Christmas Eve service. And I'm, again, just so thankful for those that are volunteering to help while Terry and I are out of town loving on our new grandson. And can't say that enough. I have lots of cute pictures. Well, not enough cute pictures. They got to get better at that. Got to talk to them, you know. My mom's going, emailing me, going, where are the pictures? I'm like, I don't know. When I get there, all y'all's Facebook feeds are going to explode with cuteness. And so, but we have this coming, this anticipation of coming, and we prepare. Luke gives us more background than any other gospel writer about the coming of Christ. And it opens up, he tells us the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth. And so you have this couple who are well past childbearing years and still without child. Zechariah serves in the priestly order, and it's his turn to be in the temple. And during that time, the angel shows up and lets him know that Elizabeth's going to get pregnant, and she's going to have a son. They'll name him John. He will be the one that will be right before Messiah and will announce the way. The favor of God shows up, and they're given this gift. You know, and then Zechariah, even with that, is still, you know, a little skeptical. You know, he says in verse 18, you know, he says to the angel, there's an angel there. And you're wondering, okay, you had an angel come, and you're still asking the question, how's this going to happen? You know, but we all do that. You know, we can have God show up right in front of us, and God would tell us, I'm going to do this. And you go, yeah, but how? You know, so the angel just shut him up until John was born. So just think about it. Think about it, Zechariah, you know. And then we get the next part of the story, and that's the story of Mary, beginning in verse 26. And so she's this next part, and again, just those reminders. She's a young teenage girl. Committed in marriage by family, betrothed, commitment part, to Joseph. She's spoken for. She's probably 13, 14 years old, not having even consummated the marriage with Joseph. This young girl, who's not experienced in anything outside the home, is told by an angel that she's going to become pregnant and it will be the Son of God. You know, I mean, you talk about confusion. You know, and so, you know, and amid all of that, the angel calls her highly favored. There is nothing favorable about being a single 14-year-old who's expecting a child when you're committed to, there's no favor in that culturally. But here's this angel saying, you are highly favored. Yeah, and it's this, all of these things that are going on. And then when we get to verse 39, it's Mary going to visit Elizabeth because they're cousins. So in verse 39, it says, at that time, Mary got ready and hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea, where she entered Zechariah's home and greeted Elizabeth. Then when Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. In a loud voice, she exclaimed, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you will bear. But why am I so favored that the mother of my Lord should come to me? As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy. Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord will fulfill his promises to her. So we get this connection with Mary and Elizabeth. When they meet, the baby John leaps inside Elizabeth's womb for joy. I mean, just all of the supernatural things that God is doing. That John is a baby inside the womb, recognizes who's in front of him, and leaps with joy. And Elizabeth can see what's going on and sense what's going on. You have all of these supernatural experiences lining up. And the way is finally prepared. Advent is on the world. Christ has come. Now, the thing about that is it's happening in a way that no one is paying attention. No one could possibly pay attention to it. Who would want to pay attention to it? You've got an older couple and you got a young teenage girl. You know, that's not how things happen in that world. This is a time where Israel is going through this struggle of wanting their own independence again and their own way of worshiping, and to get the oppressors away from them. And this is a tough time. They've been back in their land for a while, but the going has been rough. And all through this time period, what we would call that intertestamental time period, there has been this increased hope of Messiah, and there is this sense of anticipation. They have latched on to Daniel's prophecies, and there's this hope that the Ancient of Days will come and deliver them. But you're not looking for, you know, a single teenager who's pregnant. You know, you're looking for what's powerful. You know, you're looking in a different direction altogether. You know, so they've longed for this. They've come back out of captivity under Cyrus in the Persian Empire. That's where we read the story in Ezra and Nehemiah. They've been able to rebuild the temple, and they had their own sense of freedom again. And then along comes the Greeks. Alexander the Great sweeps through. He dies. His empire is broken up. Israel becomes this buffer zone. And then they get oppressed all over again. Then you get this time where they're kind of left alone. But then this one particular Greek leader, Antiochus, he gets it in his mind that he's going to, you know, have their religion. And so he kicks the Jews out of the temple, sets up the idol to Zeus, the god Zeus, and starts offering sacrifices to Zeus on the altar in the temple. And it's just this oppressive time, and they're longing for deliverance. And this is the time where you have what's called the Maccabean Revolt, and the Jews actually beat the Greeks and get them kicked out of Rome, out of Jerusalem. Reestablish the temple worship, and this is the time where we get the season that's called Hanukkah, because this is where they want to reclaim the temple and clean it out, but you have to have light in the temple, and supernaturally the oil didn't run out, and so they celebrate it as Hanukkah. So again, you have the time of hope. Here come the Romans, you know, and they're back underneath this pile of oppression. And they've got this reputation already that the Jews are not very easy to get along with, and so they'll have this time period where different governors will try to appease the Jews to keep them calm, but it's still a dark time. Herod comes along; he beautifully restores the temple. He takes that second temple that they've built, restores it into a grander place than even Solomon had. It's a much bigger area. It's this beautiful place. But they still long for Messiah. So in this world where you've got Elizabeth and Mary in their story, and there's enough chaos just on that level, you've got this macro chaos going on with everybody longing for Messiah. They want Rome out. They want to be their own people. They want the temple restored fully. And so there's that longing that where Messiah will come in and bring order and no more Romans and no more oppressors. You know, and out of that that's the mix that Jesus comes into. The problem is this Advent isn't very spectacular. You know, there's nothing about, you know, this great warrior riding in and conquering Jerusalem and kicking the Romans out. But that's the beauty of the song that Mary sings that we read earlier in the service. You know, the Jews are looking for this big splash in the darkness, and God comes through the chaos, working through an older barren woman and a young teenage girl. And then quietly, the revolution begins. And my contention is quietly, the revolution continues. And in our day, this is the parallel. We're always looking for answers to come from the places of power. You know, they're looking for answers from Rome, or they look for answers from Jerusalem and the temple area. You know, and what could possibly come out of Nazareth? Bethlehem is nothing. Why even consider that? You know, and in that day, answers come from mighty men, mighty warriors, not from old women and pregnant teenagers. You know, but that's our thing. We're always looking in the wrong places. We're always looking to, you know, bigger places and flashier answers and all kinds of stuff. You know, we think, you know, we look for solutions to come from Washington, D.C. or other places of power. We think our universities or think tanks are going to come up with solutions, or military bases or military generals might have the answer. I mean, heck, we'll even settle for Donald Trump, you know? You know, I mean, we're looking for answers in all the wrong places, okay? You know, and we, you know, in the news, because news generates out of those places, Washington and New York and Paris and L.A., but that's not where the power of the kingdom is always found. Actually, that's where the power of the kingdom is rarely found, but we keep looking for human answers. And along comes this praise song from a pregnant teenager reminding us of the greatness of God. Not the greatness of humanity involved. It's not about our name. It's about His name. So I want to leave you with three key thoughts from Mary's song here at the end of this chapter in Luke chapter 1. The first is this. The activity of God among us should lead us to humility. In verse 52, she says, He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but He has lifted up the humble. You know, we may not realize how much we think about status, but it can creep in. It can be in the church size, it can be the influence of the speaker, it can be the wealth of the individual, and so much more. And we may give more attention to whoever has celebrity status, but Mary declares that those on thrones will be brought down. And Advent brings us to God with us. And God with us should bring us to humility. Too often we treat it as, we can God lucky I was here. But we can't do that. We can't afford to do that anymore. I was listening to an interview that David Brooks, he's a columnist for the New York Times, and wrote a marvelous book called The Road to Character. And he wrote that book out of longing. It's a tremendous read. It's a really good read, because he began to look around him and he said I had everything I could need or want. I had status, I had influence, I had money, and I was miserable. I looked at people who had far less than me and were so much happier. And so that led him through just a searching, and led him to write the book out of that discovery, The Road to Character. And he said he contrasted the differences. He said even in generations there are so many differences. He was listening to these rebroadcasts from World War II, these shows that Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and guys like that would put on. They put them on weekly on the radio on Saturdays. And he said he was listening to the rebroadcast of the one. It was the first show after Japan surrendered. And Bing Crosby was starting the show, and he announced that Japan had surrendered. And he said the words and the attitude that came out of Bing Crosby and his voice and just what came across in that recording was humility, was just this thankfulness, it's over. And, you know, thank God it's done, and now we can get back to just living good lives, and you know, we're very, very thankful it's over. You know, they had just defeated Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, you know, and they didn't have this attitude of just, look at us, you know, and just, you know. And he said, you compare that to this generation. He said, you know, so I turn on the football game and you got a linebacker just getting paid $10 million a year to tackle people, you know. And he tackles someone and he gets up and he thumps his chest and dances around like he's the greatest thing on earth. And you go, that's what you got paid to do. Get back in the huddle. Yeah. You know, he was on an airplane one time and he said, he was next to this 18-year-old. He said, she's probably 18 years old. And she had her phone out and she was looking at all these Vine videos. And all the Vine videos were of herself. And she was just enamored with how she was looking and how she, you know, and he goes, there's so many differences. And sometimes we're that way. We act and then act like, you know, isn't God lucky I was there, you know, when something needed to happen, you know. And very old Steve Camp song, you know, we give God the glory, but we gladly take the award, you know. And, you know, and we need to understand God with us. God with us is immensely powerful. And it's the God with us. It's the God with us. Small. God with us. That should humble us. That God would want to use us. That we would walk in a sense of awe. Our actions can be done with spirit power. Such spirit power. That God can move through us. Through our words, our actions, our deeds. To touch someone else. And the Spirit of God can breathe into them and life can happen and God is glorified. He wants to use us, but we need to walk with thankfulness. Let's not walk with false pride. We don't do things for the opportunity of just kind of taking the award, but allow the Spirit to work through us and just let God be glorified. We need the character of humility working through us in this season. We need the character of humility working through us in this next year. May we see God do great things through Heights Church and that He gets the glory.
Yes.
The second reminder I just want to bring us to is this. The activity of God among us should lead us to act. Should lead us to act toward those who, like Mary, truly need the action of God toward them. Mary was highly favored. And it's still a problem. Because she's pregnant, she claims it's God, and no one's going to believe her. And Joseph's reputation's on the line. You know, and you know, we're on this side of the story, and so we think, you know, Mary was a saint. We don't know if she was a saint. She was a teenager. So we know some days were good, some days were not. We know this about teenagers, okay? She may have had a few more good days than bad days, but... depending on if it's in the morning or in the afternoon, you know, you always talk about your kids and you go, they do a great thing. You're just going, man, that was great. You just wait 5 minutes. Just wait. Get some perspective. Mary is not Mother Teresa holy, okay? She's not there. And God chose her. You know, and God, in His favor, acted toward her. And we need to remember, we're not much either. And truth be told, we needed God acting on our behalf, in our favor. And we need that realization in our own lives, that God acted in favor and grace toward us. And then can we not remember that in our actions, we need to reflect that same favor that God extended to us, that same grace, that same mercy, that same blessing. He extended it to us. And then He says, freely you have received, freely give. Mm-hmm. You know? And, you know, can we not remember that in our actions, we can move with God's favor and mercy toward others? So we are not so quick to judge, but we are quick to ask the Lord, what does He want us to do to help? We need to quit living for the opportunity to, you know, kind of boast on what we did and good thing God showed up, you know, I'm glad I was there to be there, used of God. And we need to live instead to understand there are those people that God is stirring. There are the Elizabeths and the Marys that no one's paying attention to. And Mary, Elizabeth, acted in favor with God's grace toward her. Joseph doesn't put her aside, doesn't reject her as he had the right to do, but puts his reputation on the line and acts in favor toward her. And how we can do the same in our lives toward others, people that just... the Spirit may speak to us, and just even if it's just a quick conversation or just an action or a prayer, where we can reach toward other people and extend the grace and the mercy and the favor of God toward them, because He has done that for us. Mm-hmm. And somebody through the Spirit of Christ did it for us too. And we need to be reminded of that. We you know, Mary in her situation might have gone through a shunning process of sorts with many religious people, you know. I mean, think about it. They come back, you know, here's this spoken for teen claiming God got her pregnant. Really? You know? And but Elizabeth paid attention and Joseph paid attention. And God works in His favor toward her. We need a fresh attitude in this world that will receive those who are like Mary or like Elizabeth, walking with some fear in their lives. And the question really needs to be this: why are we ones that might be walking in fear? We have these panic sessions over immigration and terrorism and all kinds of things. And the question should be, why are we the ones walking in fear? We certainly need awareness, but we also need to understand that God acted toward us when we didn't deserve it. We may think we did, but we need some quiet reminders that we were not worthy of His action toward us. And then to think someone acted in kindness and mercy toward us when we didn't deserve it. There isn't any one of us that would look at Mary in that day, see that she got pregnant, hear her say, God did this, and not look a little suspiciously at her. You know, just, really, yeah. Not one of us would really stand up and say, hey, quit, you know, knock it off. Quit talking like that to her. You know, none of us would say, hey, this is Mary, get a life. You know, we don't know. We know it on this side, you know. When we choose the way of blessing, we may just find the glory of God among us. Elizabeth chose to act with grace and mercy toward Mary. Joseph acted with grace and mercy toward Mary. His reputation on the line, and he chose to act godly. There are so many around us who need someone to act like Jesus toward them. People with fear in their hearts. They may not manifest it openly, but there might be fear. There might be confusion in their lives. There's hurt. And what could turn it around is someone being Jesus in their lives. So let's not be sucked into the spirit of fear this season. Let's hear the call of faith to reach out and to live above the chaos of fear. One more reminder is this. The activity of God among us, the activity of God among us should call us to worship. God had the power to bring His Son into the world any way He wanted. He could have sent Him in a Superman situation, just plop a baby in the field and some, well-meaning farm couple scoops him up and raises him, and then he shows up with a cape, you know. But God chose to start the story with someone the rest of the world wouldn't have looked twice at. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And in doing so, He made the common things of life holy. He takes the cry of a newborn baby, He takes the womb of a teenage girl, and makes them holy. And it's to remind us that no one is beyond kingdom blessing. And it's just a powerful reminder to us. And I want this to be a reminder to us. God could come any way He wants in Columbia Heights. And it may just be through you. He wants to use you to incarnate who Jesus is to the people in this city. And they should call us to worship, to give thanks. He began His work in a quiet revolution, and the quiet revolution may still be His way. What God is up to in Heights Church in Columbia Heights may never make the news, may never, hopefully not in a bad way, especially, probably the only way it's going to make the news, so let's not do that. But it may just be us that He wants to use to do the most powerful thing Columbia Heights has ever seen. And that should call us to humility, and that should call us to worship. Let's pray.